Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, bonjour, ciao, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos. Hey, my name is Jed Lee, and this is Reading with Your Kids, coming to you with love from the historic neighborhood of Reedville, tucked into the southwest corner of beautiful Boston, Massachusetts. Our mission here is all about connection, connecting kids with books, families with each other, and communities through the power of story. Every week, we're joined by incredible authors and creators whose work lights up kids' lives. You can support this mission by spreading the word, share the show with your friends, give us a shout-out at school, and let folks know that they can hear us on the WREV AM-FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Podcast Addict, Good Pods, Audible, CastBox, Player FM. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. We have a fantastic show lined up for you today. Woonie Natsu Lam Kaysen is here to celebrate her debut children's picture book, Grandmother Moon. Later in the show, we'll meet Darlene Campos, who'll be here to celebrate her middle grade novel called The Center of the Earth. And wrapping up the show will be Jessica Marie. She's here to celebrate the Mess Monster. Join us right now from the great state of Rhode Island. Our guest is here today to celebrate not only her debut children's picture book, but the release day, the birthday of the picture book. It's called Grandmother Moon. Please welcome to the show, Woonie Natsu Lam Kaysen. Hey, Woonie Natsu, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting. This is my first podcast.
Whoa, look at that. You're starting off right at the top of the game. Congratulations. What does it feel like having your book birthed into the world?
It feels very surreal. Uh-huh. There's not a lot of words that describe it because this is something that started as just an idea between my daughter and I, and then has become a real life hard copy book.
That's wonderful. Well, I want to get into the history of how the book came to be, but let's first talk about Grandmother Moon. Tell us about the characters that we'll meet.
So in the book is it's a conversation between Noam, the grandmother, and Unta, which in our language means my heart. And she is the granddaughter, so a grandmother and granddaughter. And every week, the grandmother picks up Unta in the city and drives her to spend the weekend with her on the reservation. And during that time in the car, unfolds this story when Unta asks, Noam, doesn't it look like the moon is following us? And that leads into a teaching about Grandmother Moon and why she's important to us in our culture.
Awesome. Now, you mentioned your language and our culture a couple of times, but we didn't mention what the culture and the language is. So we should probably tell people that.
Yes. So I am an Indigenous educator. I am Scaticoke and Ho-Chunk. I'm enrolled in the Scaticoke Tribal Nation. And our language, the Scaticoke language, is Algonquian. We speak the R dialect of the Algonquian language family.
So I've never heard of your tribe, but I know Algonquin is a tribe that lived, or a nation, I hope I'm using the right word, a nation that existed here in New England, correct?
Yes. So it's a language family. And so the tribes within New England and Algonquin is a much larger language family that spreads out into our other parts of the continent. But here in New England, almost all of the tribes spoke a dialect within that language family. Yeah. And so Scaticoke, my mother's tribe, our homelands are in what is now known as Western Connecticut and Eastern New York, right on the border there, kind of where New York, Connecticut, and Massachusetts meet.
Mm-hmm. Of course, being in Boston, very familiar with the area, driven through. I am not aware. Is there a reservation?
Yes.
Is there? I was not aware of that.
Yes, our reservation is near the town of Kent.
Okay.
About 300 acres, much smaller than it used to be, but right along the Housatonic River.
I was just doing some calculations in my mind. That is a very small place to live. I'm guessing there's not a lot of folks that are living in that reservation.
We have about four families that currently live on the reservation. Historically, because of economic reasons, had to leave to find jobs in order to support our family as the reservation land gradually became encroached upon. And so at this time, there's about four families that live on the reservation.
Yeah. I'm imagining, you know, we celebrate the fact that books can be mirrors, windows, and sliding glass doors. And of course, it's, an Indigenous kid reading Grandmother Moon would be delighted to see him or herself positively portrayed on the pictures of a book. But I really, being an old white guy who's been seeing himself portrayed positively in books forever, I really appreciate the fact that kids who aren't Indigenous are able to get a look into these kids' lives and get to know someone who very well could be their classmate.
Yes, definitely. It's as a teacher and, you know, I was a history teacher for many years and we know the data, you know, and what the publications look like of representation in children's book. And it's so important for Indigenous children to see themselves in the pages of this book or any Indigenous story. And because every child deserves the chance to learn from cultures, you know, not just their own, but also beyond their own. And then for Indigenous children to connect and be able to relate to a story that's that can be on the shelf next to a popular book that portrays a different culture and see that their story matters too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so very important. Talk a little bit more about Grandmother Moon and the tradition that the idea sprang from.
So this started because the little girl, inspired by my childhood, my grandmother was a Ozar tribal historian and storyteller, but she was also an educator, an anthropologist, a published author herself. And coming from a matriarchal culture, I am the first grandchild and the granddaughter. And so it was very important to her that she pass on as much knowledge as she possibly could. And so my mother was a single parent and my grandmother did a lot of help in raising me. And so she would pick me up. I spent my summers, winter breaks, spring breaks, weekends with my grandmother on the reservation or traveling around to cultural events. And this was a question that I asked one night when I was probably about 7 or 8 years old. And this led into teachings. And with her, as an educator and storyteller, every moment was a teachable moment, whether that was the walk to the outhouse or, you know, whatever it was, she found teachable moments all the time. And so my oldest daughter, when she was a senior in college, she was getting her BFA in illustration. And she asked me for her senior thesis. She said, "Mom, I really want to highlight the need for Indigenous children's books and representation in the publishing industry and children's literature." And she said, "Can you write me something that I can use for my thesis to illustrate and show the storyboard process?" And so I wrote her this book for her senior thesis and received such positive feedback from her professors and her classmates, and they encouraged me to pursue publication. And so that's where it started.
That's fantastic. Now, was your daughter able to illustrate the book?
No. The publisher chose to go with a different illustrator. She and my daughter had just graduated and wasn't quite feeling experienced enough to take on a project of this size.
Yeah. Is she hoping to illustrate children's books in the future?
Definitely. She currently lives in South Korea and is working as an English teacher for a private school there. And is working, cause she graduated during COVID. And as we know, the publishing industry, everyone had struggles during that time. And so she kind of fell into education herself.
Excellent. Well, that's fantastic. We wish her, great luck. We should probably give the illustrator a big shout out here.
Yes, Trisha Mason, or Trisha Waters Mason. She did such an amazing, beautiful job. I was so appreciative of the publisher allowing me to be a part of the selection process of the illustrator, because of the cultural nuances within the story and just the feel and the energy that I wanted to be portrayed with, in the images, I felt very strongly about choosing Trisha, and her just beautiful watercolor, ethereal, style. I felt really evoked that nighttime comforting, energy of the story itself.
Yeah. Was it because this story is so personal to you and so important, it's more than just a story you're trying to share your culture with the families that are going to be reading this book. Was it difficult to allow her to tell part of the story?
No, my difficulty came with selling the story, and making sure that I still had a voice in how it would be portrayed. But once, they told me that they got Trisha and I had seen her work, and I felt comfortable, and, she was so open to any feedback that I offered, just really gracious. And so, no, I think it was a really, beautiful relationship, you know, going back and forth and coming up with the way that she portrayed these images. I was, completely happy with the way that she caught, the relationship, but also the cultural nuances as well.
Yeah. You probably know that you're very lucky, because most traditional publishers have that big firewall between artist and author. And, I've literally had, a couple of times where I've had both author and illustrator on the podcast, and it's the first time they've met or communicated with each other.
I will say we have not. Everything went through the editor. Mm-hmm. So the editor would send me updated images. I would provide feedback, and then they would send that to Trisha. She and I have never been on a Zoom together or I've never, you know, seen her, you know, in person. We have been on a couple of email chains, but when everything was filtered through the editor.
Yeah. I'm still, I've been doing this podcast for 8 years. I'm still blown away at that.
No, and I really have enjoyed working with this publishing house. And I have learned in speaking with other children's book, authors and, other people in the industry that I really lucked out with how, gracious and supportive, they've been through this process.
Well, let's give your publisher a shout out too.
So, it's Beaming Books. They are an imprint of Augsburg Fortress, out of, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Excellent. Excellent. Boy, as a debut children's author, have you taken and like we said, it's the day as we're speaking here, this is the day that it's being released out into the world. And that must be incredibly exciting. What kind of conversations do you hope families will have as they sit down and read Grandmother Moon together?
You know, this is a story that is really about the bond between a grandmother and granddaughter and the way that the moon connects us across generations. And it is rooted in indigenous ways of knowledge and ways of seeing the world. But it's also universal, right? It's about family. It's about love. And it's about, you know, the wonder of looking up at the night sky. And for families, I really think that it's the perfect bedtime read. But it's also a conversation starter. You know, parents can ask, you know, what does the moon mean to you? And, but also within, it can be used within the educational realm as well. I added back matter from the lens of a teacher. And so I hope that they use it as an educational tool, but like you mentioned earlier, as a window or sliding glass door into Indigenous cultures and contemporary ways of being, not just placing us in a past context, mm-hmm. But that recognizing that Indigenous people are still here, and you know, an Indigenous child could be sitting in the classroom next to their child, and it might give them a talking point.
You mentioned that the way of Indigenous people look at the world. I that's not a direct quote. You were much more elegant in how you said that. But can you just talk a little bit about that and help us understand?
Well, I don't want to speak in too many generalizations because our relationship, because Indigenous people are not a monolith, and are, mm-hmm. there's so much diversity within just, you know, say New England, right? And I say that in the back matter in the book, that this comes specifically from my teachings, and it may vary from tribe to tribe. But in, for most tribes and most Indigenous peoples, we see the moon, we see the land, we see, you know, the ecosystems as relatives. And that's how we are raised to treat them. You know, like the terminology, right? Grandmother Moon or Mother Earth. We use kinship terms. Uh-huh. It's same thing with our animal relatives and our bird relatives. And, even, you know, we, you know, so not to go into depth, but so we very much treat the land and, you know, all living beings as relatives, and want to pay our respect as a relative. And so I think I apologize if I've gone off of what your original intended question was.
You're fine. This is fine.
You know, so I think it also allows the way that we view the world and the way that we navigate and engage with the world and tell our stories. You know, our stories carry that history. They carry that ecological knowledge, that agricultural knowledge, that star knowledge, and it's all carried in there. And our stories are not just history. They are living and breathing. They are fluid, and they help us grow in our understanding of our place in the world and how we should navigate and treat not just each other, but the earth and all of its beings.
What a beautiful thing we can teach our kid, that we are all part of one beautiful, not only human family, but I guess earthly family. Oh, no, actually universal family.
Yes.
Getting the stars and the moon in there. I think that's incredibly healthy. And how much better would we be if we... when we're talking to somebody that has a different perspective on something and has maybe a different opinion than we do, if we could also sit back and say, okay, well, this person that I disagree with is still part of my family. And mm-hmm. so we need to learn how to disagree in a respectful way.
And that's exactly why diverse children's books are so important, is because that is where we see those differences, and we see, we can connect, maybe find a commonality with a character within those stories, and they help teach our children, curiosity, but also empathy.
You were mentioning earlier about statistics about children's books. Can you talk a little bit? And just in the time that I've been producing this podcast, I know that representation has improved, but we still have a long way to go. I've heard people talk about statistics that diverse characters appear in so many percentages of kids' books. Do you have an idea of what those numbers might be?
I will say the last time So there's a graphic out there, and I would want to look it up so that I don't get the exact numbers wrong. You are correct. There has been in the last, I want to say 5 or 6 years, there has been a large shift, in the publishing industry in actively pursuing diverse voices. We see that, you know, even like, is it HarperCollins that has the Heart Drum imprint that specifically publishes Indigenous stories? And that just launched a couple of years ago. So we are seeing a large shift. And I think like it was 2018 that I think it was 78%. And again, I could be completely wrong on that statistic. But 78% of, I feel like I'm going to misspeak and I apologize.
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, it's okay. So a large portion, a predominantly large portion of children's books did not include diverse voices, did not include, any of, what is commonly called BIPOC, content. But then, in 2023, according to, We Need Diverse Books and the CCBC, the Cooperative Children's Book Center, they have really pushed, for this shift. And so I saw some numbers that, if like 47% of children's books, published in 2023 had, authors of color. Huh? And then it was, I think like in, and then it jumped from 47 to 51% in 2024. And so we are seeing that more equal representation of what our classrooms, what our library, you know, patrons, what, you know, what our society looks like, and what their experiences are. So we are seeing that shift in the publishing industry.
That's fantastic. We've really celebrated the fact that when we launched, it was a real the majority of our authors were indie authors and self-published authors. And we had loads and loads and loads of books written by BIPOC authors and featuring representation. I'm glad that the traditional publishing world is catching up.
Yes, I am too. I've been, even when I attended ALA, the Association of the American Library Association conference in Philadelphia this year, just walking around in the exhibit hall and seeing the books that were being released in the next year or so was just so heartwarming of just the diversity of the stories and the representation. It's really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. It certainly is. One thing we didn't spend enough time on is the intergenerational friendship that is celebrated in the book. And that's something that, you know, my grandmother was incredibly important to me. She lived 5 doors down in the city, in the inner city where I grew up. And we did all sorts of stuff together. We used to go to the professional wrestling matches together and the roller derby. And it was great. She was such an important part of my life. I know now that because of our society, people don't live 5 doors down from their grandmothers, typically. But boy, those relationships between, even now, my niece is 21. Her and I are incredibly close. I'm almost 100. But I think those intergenerational friendships are so very, very important.
Truly, my grandmother and I, my dedication in the book is to my grandmother and says, I am because you were. Awesome. And it truly, that's, I always tell people I'm just riding her coattails. Uh-huh. And because those relationships truly shape us. And in Indigenous cultures, our grandmothers are you know, the keepers of stories and traditions. And with this book, I really wanted to honor that. I started writing this, my grandmother was, battling, Alzheimer's and dementia. And, I wrote this kind of just as a love letter to her, when I was, probably six years old, she published a paper, and she was an academic. And so she published a paper, but she wrote an about, the role of women in our culture. And she wrote an addendum called An Open Letter to My Granddaughter. And in that letter, she wrote, all of the things, how she viewed her role as a grandmother and all of the things that she hoped, to pass on to me and leave me with as her only granddaughter. And so this book was just an opportunity for me to show her a little bit of what I still carry with me. And then she, I received the offer, for purchase from the publisher, 2 months after she passed. So yeah,
I had a hand in it.
That's what I tell people. It's a special feeling, you know, of being loved so unconditionally by a grandparent and being guided by someone, you know, in your family in that way. And so it really felt like she had a hand in that.
That's beautiful. I love it. We should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Grandmother Moon and find out more about you.
Well, Grandmother Moon is available anywhere books are sold. And so really anywhere that you purchase books, Grandmother Moon is available. And to find out more about me, you can follow me on Instagram at indigenous_history_nerd. Hopefully, we will see a few more stories about Noam and Unta coming soon.
Excellent. Excellent. We've had a great time speaking to the author of Grandmother Moon. If it's not on the shelf of your local independent bookstore, all you have to do is ask nicely and they'll get it there in a day or two. Same with your public library. And really, we should definitely encourage you to do that. Go out to your indie bookstore and ask for the book in your public library. Our guest today has been Wanyatnatsu Lam Kaysen. My friend, thanks so much for being on Reading With Your Kids.
Thank you so much.
Are you looking for a creative way to bond with your kids? Let me tell you all about Drawing With Your Kids, the ultimate destination for artistic adventures. Join us as we dive into the wonderful world of children's books with renowned illustrators guiding you step by step. From beloved characters to whimsical scenes, unleash your imagination and create cherished memories together. Whether you're a seasoned artist or just picking up a pencil, there's something for everyone at Drawing With Your Kids. Please visit our website, readingwithyourkids.com, and click on the Drawing With Your Kids link at the top of the page and let the creativity flow. Drawing With Your Kids, where every stroke brings stories to life. Join us right now from Houston in the great state of Texas. Our guest is here today to celebrate her middle grade novel. It's called The Center of the Earth. Please welcome to the show, Darlene Campos. Hey, Darlene, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you on. I am very intrigued about your story. I understand that this is about, it's a story about Jewish refugees who found safety in Ecuador during the Holocaust.
Yes, that's correct.
So tell me about the story. Is this a historical novel, or are we going to meet some fictional characters who tell the story?
So the book, it has two main characters. It's a dual point of view book. So one of the main characters is Dahlia. She's an Ecuadorian girl, and she's the daughter of an Ecuadorian diplomat who's stationed in Germany. And she meets Werner, who's a German Jewish boy, and they become best friends. So she convinces her father to create a false identity for Werner and get him to Ecuador, where he's going to be safe.
Yeah. Where I'm understanding that a lot more refugees found safety in places like Ecuador and other Latin American countries that I was aware of.
Yeah, so it's a pretty unknown part of World War II history. Mm-hmm. So Ecuador took in about, I think the number is about 1,200 refugees. And then from those 1,200, there's around 80,000 descendants around today.
Wow. Wow. What a blessing.
Oh, yes, for sure.
What was it that inspired you to write the book?
So back in 2018, when I first started writing the book, I wanted to write a historical fiction book because I love history. Mm-hmm. And I've always been intrigued by World War II history. But World War II is a topic that has been touched on kind of a lot. So sure. I was looking for something unique. And then one day, my uncle, he sent me a link to a documentary called An Unknown Country. And this documentary is about Jewish refugees finding safety in Ecuador, you know, during the Holocaust. And it had interviews with all these different kinds of people who said, you know, I was in Germany and I got on the last boat to South America, and someone else was in Italy and someone else was in Czechoslovakia. And then I thought, this is such an amazing story. And then I did some research and it turns out there weren't any kids' novels about this topic. So I decided, mm-hmm. you know what? I'm going to write the book I want to see on shelves. So that's what I did.
Good for you. Good for you. And good for your uncle. Did he have the idea that this might spark a book from you by sharing that documentary?
Yeah, he definitely did, because he also loves history as well. And I'm so grateful that he passed that documentary along, because maybe I wouldn't have come across it otherwise.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. Big credit goes to my uncle.
Yeah. Listen, we've talked about it here on the podcast. It seems history is fascinating. The STEM subjects can be fascinating. But it seems that at some point, somebody in our educational system decided, all right, we're going to take these subjects that are really interesting and dynamic, and we're going to make them, teach them in a way that is as boring as possible and turn kids off to do any additional study. What do you think that might have happened?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And I was actually talking about that earlier with my boss at work, was that when I was in college, I did enjoy the literature I had to read, but I didn't enjoy the way that it was taught.
Mm-hmm.
And what can really make or break a class is the way that the subject matter is taught.
Right.
So when I was forming this novel, I really didn't want it to be too boring, especially because it is historical. And, you know, some kids might be turned off by, oh, this is very old, like there's no smartphones, there's no social media in it. So I was really aiming for, you know, what is something that kids can really get into. So
yeah,
that was my goal.
Yeah. And in writing it, how did you solve that problem in this book? How did you make it interesting and not boring?
That's a great question. So I interviewed 8 refugees, and they were all children when they went to Ecuador.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave me these really unique perspectives on what it was like to escape to a whole nother continent as a child. So their windows into their experiences really helped formulate, you know, a story for a kid.
Yeah.
Like one of them talked about how, you know, he had some trouble making friends because there was a language barrier. But then since he was a kid, he picked up Spanish within a couple of weeks.
Oh.
And, you know, kids can learn a language very quickly. Yeah. And then other ones, they talked about how they joined, you know, some clubs. They joined like what we would call here like the Girl Scouts. And that's how they made some friends. Another one joined the wrestling team. So then they had all these, you know, kid experiences that I incorporated into the book. So it was perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of those refugees escaping death on the continent of Europe and going to South America, which is literally half a world away. And unlike today, where we have, you know, I can have a conversation with somebody in Ecuador or Australia, you know, from my home through the magic of technology. These kids from Germany were traveling to a place that they probably had very little knowledge of.
Yes, that's correct. One of the refugees I interviewed, he left from Italy. And when his parents told him that they were going to be going to Ecuador, his parents did not know where that was, but he was very into geography, so he knew exactly where that was. So he was actually kind of excited. He saw it as an adventure, which, you know, I guess is one way to look at things.
Sure.
Yeah, but, you know, like I said, like, their perspective as children really gave me a unique perspective, because the documentary, there were some people who are a little bit older, and then there are some testimonies that were written by adults who had gone to Ecuador in their 30s, 40s, and they left behind, you know, a story of how they made it for their children, grandchildren. But to hear, you know, about kids going, it was pretty fantastic. So
yeah, it really must have been. I know how excited I get when I'm visiting a different country. I'm just trying to put myself in their shoes, and it's very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. What was the most in your conversations with these folks? What was the most the thing about their experience that struck you the most?
What I really found interesting was, even though they had, all of them had different experiences, they all said, even, you know, being in their 90s and late 80s, they all remembered exactly how long it took to get to Ecuador. And they all said unanimously it was 3 weeks, because they felt like they were never going to get there, because there was no air travel like there is today, where you can get there from Europe. It would probably take, let's say, maybe 20 hours or so. Imagine being on a boat for 3 weeks as a kid. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting, that they all remembered exactly how long it took.
Yeah, yeah. And we're not talking about Carnival Cruise Lines, where, you know.
Oh, no. Nope.
Not very luxurious accommodations.
No, and a lot of them, you know, did talk about that too, that some of the food was really bad, or they got really seasick, and a lot of them just really didn't have a good time. So, so I can imagine, you know, being 8, 9, 10 years old and thinking, yeah, where the heck are my parents taking me?
So tell me, what kind of conversations do you think families can have as they're co-reading The Center of the Earth together?
Sure. So I think the story can spark conversations such as, you know, it's wrong to hate people who are different from you.
Sure.
It can spark a conversation about immigration policies, you know, who should be let into a country and who should not be let into a country, as, you know, we're seeing today.
Uh-huh.
It can spark a conversation about not even just being tolerant of other people, because tolerant is not a great word. And right. That is a word that I heard, you know, when I was growing up, was, oh, we have to be tolerant. You know, there has to be more tolerance in the world. And tolerance just means I can stand you, but it doesn't mean I accept you.
Right.
So I think acceptance is definitely more important. And that's exactly what the story aims to do.
Yeah. I had a conversation with another author a couple of weeks ago, and she was talking about the difference between feeling accepted and feeling as if you belong. And I think that's something, hopefully, that we can all strive to help the people in our lives feel like they belong in our lives.
Oh, very true. I love that.
Tell me, what is it about this middle grade age group that you love to write for?
So I really love to incorporate middle grade humor.
Okay.
I think it's a lot of fun. When I was a kid, I was really into the humor of the Captain Underpants series. And I remember hearing some parents didn't appreciate the toilet humor. And, you know, the idea of, why is this person in underpants? But, you know, kids are really into that stuff. And it's like, hey, you know, if you can make some kids laugh through your stories, why not?
Absolutely. This is somebody who very much is not middle grade aged. I am not even middle aged. I am very elderly, and I still love those. I still love that humor. I think it's great. It's fine. Yeah. Who were the authors that you loved reading when you were a kid?
Well, I did love Dave Pilkey. Yeah. Definitely loved the Captain Underpants series. I really enjoyed Kate DeCamillo. I still love Because of Winn-Dixie. Such a beautiful book. And I first read it when I was, I believe, 11 years old. Okay. And all these years later, I still remember how beautiful it was.
Yeah.
And I also did enjoy E.B. White. and I enjoyed, what is his name? Richard Scarry.
Okay, great. Well, we've had Kate on the podcast three times. She was a wonderful, wonderful guest.
Yes, I did see that on the website, and it's an honor to be on the same show as she was. I think that's really cool.
Now we have to work on Dave Pilkey.
Oh, yeah, he'd be great.
Yeah, I love it. Tell me, what's next from you?
So I have an idea for another middle grade, and I've gotten about four drafts into it, and this one is also a World War II historical fiction, and it takes place at a now-defunct mental institution for children.
Ooh.
So this was a mental institution in the Netherlands, and it had it housed children who have, you know, what we would call anxiety, what we would call schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. But back then, those terms were not widely used.
Right.
However, this hospital was pretty progressive. So they did not use straitjackets. They didn't just, you know, medicate kids and make them sleep all day. They had kids, you know, playing football, as in soccer, because European football.
Yeah.
And they had kids, you know, who would make crafts, who learned how to make pots, things like that. So they were very different than the average mental hospital of that time.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, it's not around anymore. Obviously, the war got to it. And now it's a rehabilitation center.
Okay.
But, you know, so that is an idea I have floating around in my head. And if I get it further than four drafts, you know, maybe one day it'll be a real book.
Someday it will be a real book. We have to think positive.
Yes. Think positive. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, you were mentioning Dave Pilkey and Captain Underpants. I remember being in Panama 5 or 6 years ago and going into a bookstore, and I saw the Spanish edition of Captain Underpants. I forget how you say it in Spanish, but I thought that was pretty cool. And my son was a big fan of the series. And even though he was in his 20s at the time, I bought that Spanish copy and brought it home for him.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. Any thought of having your middle grade novels translated into Spanish?
I would love to. That is a goal of mine. Since half of the book does take place in Ecuador, I think it would be perfect to have it translated into Spanish so that kids in Ecuador could read it as well.
Yeah, yeah. That would be a real, I think that would be something kids in Ecuador would really love, because it would show just, you know, what a wonderful thing their nation did for people in need.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. So that's definitely one of my goals for this book.
Tell us where we can go to find out more about the Center of the Earth and find out more about you.
Sure. So you can find out more about me on my website. My website is www.darlenepcampos.com. I'm also on Facebook under Darlene P. Campos Writer. And I'm on Instagram. My username is @DarlenePCampos.
We've had a great time speaking to the author of The Center of the Earth, the powerful new middle grade novel from our guest, Darlene Campos. Darlene, thanks for being on Reading With Your Kids.
Oh, thank you so much. It was wonderful.
Before we invite our guest into the studio, I would love to invite you to visit a very special website. It's clownswithoutborders.org. clownswithoutborders.org. This is a group that I absolutely adore. I am part of Clowns Without Borders, and I had the honor of being part of the 2023 tour of El Salvador. I had so much fun joining with artists from all over the world to bring a smile to people who really needed it and really appreciated it too. And we would love for you to join us as a monthly Join Maker. The Join Makers, they're a family of people just like you who love to laugh and make other people feel good. So please take a moment and visit clownswithoutborders.org and consider joining me as a Join Maker. Join us right now from Kansas City, Kansas. Our guest is here today to celebrate the mess monster. Please welcome to the show, Jessica Bell. Jessica, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Wonderful. So happy that you're on the show. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So what is this mess monster? Tell us all about it.
So the mess monster is a book that I wrote. It is about a little monster that invades my little girl, Lucy, her room, the character, and he invades the room, and Lucy blames it on a mess monster invading her room, and hunts around for the mess monster all throughout the book, for the mess monster, and then she realizes it's really her, the mess monster is her, but then at the end, she comes back, and she finds the mess monster, and it's writing on backs. And the whole book is about Lucy. Her mom has made her, or trying to make her clean her room and find her soccer cleats.
Ah.
But in the meantime, she's looking for the mess monster.
All right. Boy, you know, I think my son's room must have been invaded by the mess monster.
My daughter was too.
You know, and boy, he never found it, but he... He found a wife that deals with it now, so that's okay.
My daughter once said to me, "Mom, are you sure there's not a mess monster?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's not a mess monster."
So I'm guessing that this was inspired by your daughter and her.
Well, it was inspired by my daughter, but if you go along the series, I have a book called The Mess Momster.
Uh-huh.
About an MLM mom, and it's about me. So it was kind of inspired by both of us. We kind of have the messy personality.
Ah, messy. Well, you know, they say that a messy desk is a sign of a productive person or something like that.
Really? I've never heard that. That's good to know.
Well,
I've heard creatives are messier.
Yes, indeed.
So
indeed.
There we go.
Yeah. Tell me, did you always aspire to be a children's author?
I was never really known as a writer in my family, but the past few years, I really got into it, and I think the biggest turning point was when I was a teacher, I would read children's books in the classroom, and I just fell in love with it. Just being able to read to kiddos and kind of touch them in that way. That's great. I love it.
Yeah. Tell me, what age group did you teach?
Well, I taught kindergartners and I taught preschool age, special ed.
Were you able to see when the kids came in, could you sit back and say, oh yeah, that kid's parents reads to him every night. That kid's parents probably doesn't.
Yeah, I really do think it made a difference, to be honest. And I mean, even when I'd sit in a circle and have a large group of students, kids really, a lot of them really pursued it and they loved that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
So I understand there's four books in the Mess Monster series.
There is. Right now, the original is, of course, the Mess Monster. And then they have The Mess Monster in Love, which is about Valentine's Day and a classroom party that goes awry. And then they have The Mess Monster, which centers on fall. And then they have The Mess Monster Christmas, which is about a mom getting ready for Christmas and her daughter wants it to be perfect and organized. And the mom says, Christmas is really about memories. And so the mess monster, he kind of messes stuff up, but in a good way, in that case.
That's cool.
I
love it. What a neat character you've created.
It's a really fun character. And I feel like it can go along, like, there are so many concepts that I can focus on with these books and the mess monster. It can visit everywhere.
Sure, I could see a mess monster invading a kindergarten class.
Oh, trust me. And you know what? The next one I'm going to write, though, is a mess monster on vacation.
Uh-huh.
And he invades their rooms or hotel rooms. But, you know, I'm also going to throw in the idea of environment because it's so big now. And so playing at the beach was my thought.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I love it. And
thank you.
We were talking before we hit record that you had a fifth book as well.
Yeah, I do. It's called Finding My Roar. And this book is about a little girl who goes to the zoo named Ruby. And she goes to the zoo and she gets picked on by a little boy. And at the end of the book, the little boy is picking on her is getting picked on himself by his older sister. Uh-huh. And little girl Ruby interferes and says, don't pick on him or whatever she says. Uh-huh. And she makes a joke and the little boy is saved by that.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
So,
oh.
Yeah, it's really fun.
I like that. Now that you're out of, I'm assuming that you're out of the classroom now.
I am, yes.
How does it feel to, but you're still educating, you're still teaching through your books.
I sure am.
How does that transition feel?
First of all, I think teachers are wonderful. I love everything they do. I think they should pay it off to teachers. I love them. But for me, writing in this sense and sharing with younger kids is such a genuine way to share with kids and also teach them emotional and social learning as opposed to teaching in the classroom. I think this is great. Thing to do.
Uh-huh. Have you had the chance to do any classroom visits and how did they?
I had a few and they love my book, so it's really fun. And you know, I taught a whole grade once and it was like a group assembly and I used my must sponsor books and they really adapted it. They loved it.
Yeah, maybe you could get some school custodians to endorse your book.
Yeah, there you go. That's perfect. I should, absolutely.
Are you thinking about writing, stretching out and writing in other genres, maybe middle grade?
You know, I thought about middle grade. I thought about older elementary kids. And mm-hmm. they're graphic novels, but I can't draw anything. So that's a problem right there.
That is a problem. You have to, graphic novels, they take hundreds of
years. Yeah. And I also am really, so I have a few manuscripts right now that center around board books.
Uh-huh.
And I love that genre. I think that's going to be my new thing is board books. I love it. I think it's so fun.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for aspiring authors?
I think just to be patient with it. I think that writing and publishing especially takes a long time.
Sure does.
And authors tend to be understanding and also have patience and love what they do because that is the most important thing. I think that my work is something that I love to do now, and I think that's really important for everybody.
Yeah, super, super important. Well, we should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about the Mess Monster and find out more about you.
So if you want to buy my books, my website is jessicamarieauthor.com. And I sell on Amazon. I sell all the online stuff. So if you guys want to jump on there, you can always purchase there or through my website, jessicamarieauthor.com.
jessicamarieauthor.com. Well, we've had a great time speaking to the author of the Mess Monster series. Our guest has been Jessica Marie Bell. Jessica.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Hey, that's a wrap for this episode of Reading With Your Kids. Want more content? Head on over to readingwithyourkids.com. You'll find amazing book reviews, author interviews, and learn about our certified great read program. And if you are an author, click the Authors Click Here button to find out how you can be a guest. Being a guest is fun, it's easy, and it gives you the chance to tell thousands of KidLit fans all over the world about your fantastic children's book. We'd also love for you to connect with us on social media, facebook.com/readingwithyourkids, @readingwithyourkids on Instagram, and @JedlyMagic on X. Our YouTube channel, youtube.com/readingwithyourkids. If you love this episode, please share it with somebody you care about. Leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe wherever you find your podcast. Want to thank the people who made today's show so wonderful, starting with our guests, Woninatsu, Sue, Lamb, Kaysen. Please be sure to check out Grandmother Moon. Darlene Campos, please be sure to check out The Center of the Earth. And Jessica Marie, please be sure to check out The Mess Monster. I want to thank my team, Fatima Khan, Chris Daugherty. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we want to thank you. You are the real heroes of this show, because every time you read with your kid, you're spreading love, you're spreading learning, and you're spreading kindness all throughout the world. I'll be looking for you in the next episode of Reading with Your Kids. We'll be right back.